Federal News now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's great to be back in the saddle again. Yeah, I was in Colorado last week at Breckenridge for my son's wedding.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. We had a nice time out there walking around Breckenridge. It's beautiful out there. And it's kind of interesting. You go out there and you've got all these people at, say, at receptions. And everybody has their cell phone checking email, checking text messages. It's like mobile has just infected everybody.
Yeah.
And then the, all the people, of course, there would then communicate by text messaging.
Yeah.
So it really has completely changed the way people communicate, the way that even at the same, you know, at the same reception, you might text somebody at the other side of the room. In the old days, you just go over and talk to them.
Go and find them, right, exactly.
Yeah, so it's I was kind of watching that as mobile technology has basically shifted everything. I've got all my emails on my cell phone, so I don't even take a computer with me anymore.
Yeah, sure.
I just have the cell phone. It's just right there. I mean, it really does change life and make life quite easy. And then, of course, we have to tether to Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, because I was on the beach yesterday trying to work on something on my laptop, and my air card didn't work very well there, and the Wi-Fi was one of these pay things. I said, you know what? I'm just going to be at the beach today.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, you could always get, I guess you could get an extender or something if you got too weak of a signal. But, you know, sometimes it is good just to turn things off.
It is.
But they certainly weren't turned off at this big ceremony, I have to say.
So for our listeners, this is your son we've talked about on the show before, who was big into racing bikes, right?
Yes.
And he also likes to steal your bandwidth at home and download music and things.
Yeah, that's that was the old days,
yeah,
I guess.
Things have changed.
Now what he does, he has actually, he's on Netflix, and so he has basically unlimited data on his cell phone, so he watches movies, Netflix movies, on his cell phone.
The screen's too small. I just can't do that, you know?
I think it is, too, because I was looking, I'm on the data, he's on my data plan.
Of course he is.
This is one of the problems. How do you get your kids off your data plan? This is like a side topic.
He's married now.
I know.
He should be off the payroll. What's he doing for work?
I think he's going to eventually probably get off the plan the next time. But so I go on there and I check the data, and he might use 10 gigabytes in 3 months, and I use half a gigabyte. Mm-hmm. You know, I hardly use any, and because I just use it for emails. I don't watch videos. I'm not a big YouTube person. And if I have any big downloads, I do it on Wi-Fi.
Sure.
Now he has Wi-Fi at home, so it's not that bad. But you know, he figures, well, shoot, I've got unlimited data. I want to take advantage of it. He doesn't have very many minutes. It's all data. Well, it was interesting week in technology.
Yep.
It's the lazy, hazy days of summer. People are worried about Facebook security.
Mm-hmm.
Security attacks are up on websites. SQL injection attacks are up 69%. Yahoo was hacked, and they took 442,000 passwords, and these were analyzed by ESET. And I'm going to give you the top 10 passwords that people selected. As,
1111.
You know, so you just wonder how stupid people can be.
Password.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
DARPA developed an interesting thing, a power strip hacker. It looks just like a power strip, but built inside of it is all kinds of technology that will hack into wireless networks.
Oh, great.
And you can you can buy it at will. And we'll talk about some top trends. We're going to feature the man who is behind probably the most innovative change to digital cameras or cameras that have come along in a long time.
Yeah, this is interesting. You want to stay
this
tuned for this.
I'll just give you a hint. Instead of focusing the camera before you take the picture, you take the picture and focus afterwards. Mm. It's extremely interesting. And, of course, it was a big, big mailbag.
A huge week.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
We got an email from Leslie in Fairfax. I'm going to travel overseas and have heard that Viber is a good way to call when using voice over RP, but I'm confused. I've always used Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Can you compare Viber and Skype? That's V-I-B-E-R and Skype. Well, I'll tell you, both Skype and Viber, I have them both on my iPhone. They both have Android and iPhone applications. They both are voice over IP applications, and they use the data in your wireless connection. Voice over IP simply means that they take the voice, they break it up, they digitize it, they break it up into packets, and they send it as an internet protocol packet. So it's basically they convert the voice stream to a data stream, send it to the other end, and then they convert the data back into sound, and that's voice over IP. Now, Skype has been around for a long time, and it's really synonymous with online calls since it was first launched for desktop computers. You know, you install Skype on your desktop, and you could call another Skype computer, and it would be a free call, or you could call a phone, which would be Skype out, and then you would pay a certain, low-cost rate for that country, like 2.5 cents to call China, 2.5 cents to call India. Maybe Pakistan could be 14 cents. The Asian countries, many of the Asian countries that are under tight government control, they tend to be a little more expensive because mm-hmm. it's a revenue generator for the government. And so Skype was really always the go-to voice over IP program. Recently I was quite disconcerted when Microsoft bought Skype, but they haven't ruined it yet. It's still quite nice, and I do like Skype. So Skype requires that you put in a username. You create a pad, you create a username, like we've got Tech Talk Radio 1 is the username for the Tech Talk Radio Skype account. Then you create an account, and if somebody wants to call you, they have to look up your username. And if you have Skype on a cell phone, you can't receive a call unless you open the application. So you have to open the application on your iPhone or Android and then have it, leave it open and running in the background in order to receive a call. Now, Viber is the new kid on the block. It was released only about a year ago.
Okay.
Now, it is exclusively mobile to mobile. So you cannot call another landline. You can't install it on a computer. You can't call a computer. It's purely mobile to mobile. So in that way, it's limited. Now, what you do is, instead of having a username like Tech Talk Radio 1, you just use your phone number as uh-huh. your username. So you just put in your phone number, and then it sends you a text message. Then the text message has a 4-digit number on it, which then you enter into the Viber account to verify the number. And then once your number is verified, that's it. That's all it takes to set up the account. It's very quick. And then Viber immediately synchronizes with all your contacts. So when I installed Viber on my iPhone, it immediately figured out that I had 24 of my contacts had Viber already. Now, the nice thing is, if I call one of the contacts with Viber, I get a choice. Make a free call through Viber or call through the 3G phone connection. And then if I call through Viber, the folks at the other end will receive the call without opening up the Viber application. It actually has a push notification. And so using Viber mobile to mobile is about as convenient as just using the regular cell phone mm-hmm. connection. And the interface for Viber is nice. So a lot of people like Viber because it's so easy to use. It's integrated so well with the Android and the iPhone that they say, this is easier to use. We like it. Now, let's compare them. Skype for the mobile has video, so you can do video calling. There is no video on Viber. Skype has a codec, which is an encryption technique, which is highly efficient. So Skype is able to compress the voice, digitize it, and send it in a way which is very efficient and doesn't use much bandwidth. Moreover, the quality of the Skype sound is better.
Uh-huh.
So when I compare, I'll call the same person, one with Skype and then one with Viber. The Viber is kind of has a ringy sensation to it. So the audio quality is not quite as good
mm-hmm.
with Viber as it is with Skype, but it's getting better. Viber allows you to send free text messages using the data. If you send a text message through Skype, they charge you like a penny a minute. So those are kind of the differences. I think if I had to make a choice, I would put Skype on my iPad because I want to do video calls with
right.
the iPad. But because of the absolute convenience of just being able to make a phone call with the number and the interface, I'd probably use Viber on my cell phone, especially when I'm traveling. So those are the two variations. You can download both Viber and Skype to either your iPhone or your Android. They're both free applications, and you can play with both of them. It don't cost anything.
That's funny. Yeah, I was just looking. As you were talking, I called up their app here on the computer. I may download Viber. That's pretty neat.
So I got an email from John in Texas. So I've been playing with Viber actually for I got this email a while ago. So I've been playing with it for about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
At first I thought, why am I going to mess with it? But it's growing.
Yeah,
it's kind of growing on me. We got an email from John in Texas. I would like to use my iPhone for navigation. My friends have an Android, and they all enjoy turn-by-turn navigation, which, of course, is integrated with the Android operating system. However, the iPhone Maps application only gives written driving directions, but not turn-by-turn audio directions. What are my options? Love the show, John. Well, John, here's the thing. The Maps application in the iPhone 4S and 3, in other words, the iOS 4... The current operating system for Apple supports Maps, and Maps is backed by Google mapping technology. In the old days, Google and Apple got along.
Yeah,
there was actually the president of Google at the time, Eric Schmidt, was on the Apple board of directors when Apple developed the iPhone. He saw the whole iPhone evolving. And then a few years later, Google released Android.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Jobs had a conniption fit, and he said, this is nuclear war.
Oh, my God.
He hated the Android. He thought they'd ripped off the iPhone, and he was really teed off with them. So he did not want to have a core technology that Google used in their phones based on any Google product. So in the iOS 6, which is coming out, the next operating system that Apple's going to have, it's going to have an entirely new mapping application which does not use the Google back end. And that app mapping application is going to have turn-by-turn directions. Now, they could have used turn-by-turn directions from the Google application, but they didn't want their users to ever get dependent on much of Google.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when the next operating system comes out, we will have turn-by-turn navigation. And now Apple's got to play catch-up on this whole mapping deal because they're far behind Google in acquisition of maps. They are teaming up. They've signed a partnership agreement with TomTom. So they're going to integrate into the operating system, the TomTom navigation system, actually, is what's going to happen. Now, but your question is, what can I do now?
Right.
That was all on a side and a sidebar.
As a sidebar, right.
John, I have good news for you.
He has good news,
there
John.
There is an application that gives you turn-by-turn applications available now. It's called MapQuest.
Uh-huh.
You can download MapQuest. And then you can turn it on. It gives you turn-by-turn applications. MapQuest is free. It is ad-supported, so you got to put up with some, you know, Best Western ads or something occasionally that pop in there. But I'll tell you, when I was out in Colorado, I took my TomTom with me because I don't like to rent these navigation systems because
yeah.
they charge you, you know, $10 a day or something. So I took my TomTom with me, had it there. And then I opened up MapQuest, and I had the two navigation systems working side by side, and MapQuest worked really well.
Hmm.
I mean, actually, I could just sit my phone there and I could just listen to the directions. It was quite good.
Wow.
And so I actually was surprised. There was one location we were going to some mining town or something there, and that was, I can't remember what it was. And my TomTom would not take the address, but I pop it into MapQuest. It took it.
There it is.
It took it. Now, MapQuest, surprisingly, is an AOL product, which, you know, if, when I saw that, I said, well, this has got to be, you know.
Right.
Crap. Yeah. That's a
technical term,
that's
isn't it?
Yeah, that's a technical term. So that's like you know, computer recycling, computer recycle and
something
and processing. So it's a technical term.
Yeah.
You know, referring to products that we don't think
they
we
don't
would
think
like.
Good. No.
So, but it turns out it's a great product, and so. You know, so you just download MapQuest. It's free. You got to put up with an ad or two, but it's all right. So that was a great question. And, I almost bought the Android phone because I wanted to get the turn-by-turn navigation that came
for
with
the
Android.
Trip?
No, no, when, before I bought
before
the iPhone.
Okay, I was going to say.
Before I bought the iPhone, that's why I was going to go after the Android. And then what what actually sold me on the iPhone this time was I could get dual-band GSM as well as CDMA, so that's what
right.
flipped the trigger for me then, and I couldn't get it at that time for the Android. But I'm glad to see that we'll have an integrated system coming up very soon. We got an email from a listener in Boston.
Wow.
Now, dear Tech Talk, I recently wrote an email from my Yahoo account and sent it to the wrong email address in Europe.
Oops.
Is there any way that I can retrieve that email that I sent to the wrong email address and delete it before the wrong recipient can read it? Thanks. I think he's got a problem.
I think
here.
He does have a problem. It sounds like it's an email that he doesn't want somebody else to read.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It sounds like an email Well, I'll tell you, this is the short answer, listener in Boston. You
mm-hmm.
actually can't get back your email. Once you send it, it's gone. This is what happens. When you send it, it ends up residing on a server which is not under your control, and you can't get that email back without their cooperation. Once it leaves your outbox, you lose control. You lose control over it. Now, in the case of Gmail, there is an unsend button. Did you know that, Jim?
I didn't know that, Doc.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. There is an unsend button. And so there's like...
Yeah, I could have used that a few times.
There's only about 5 seconds that the unsend button... Because when you hit send, it goes to the outbox. And before it's actually delivered... From the outbox,
let's go to the laboratory and test that right now. I'm going to send you an email.
You can click an unsend, but it's there for a very short time. Now, if you are on a corporate email system where you're all on the same server, some corporate email systems will have an unsend button where it'll just delete because it's all on the same server, and they'll just delete it from the recipient.
You're going to get a message from me you're not going to like.
Okay.
Because the unsend thing didn't come up.
The unsend thing didn't come up? Well, no. I'll have to do some more research on
well,
that.
Well, you know what? I'm using an old browser, too. Would that make a difference?
It could possibly make a difference. Now, if it's really an email that's embarrassing to you and it's just on a corporate email server,
mm-hmm.
you can call the ID department and get them to delete it,
yeah.
you know. But here's the lesson. Here's the take-home lesson.
Yeah?
The take-home lesson is read your email. Look at all the recipients before you hit the send button.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Before you hit the send button. Then we got an email from Alex. Dear Dr. Schertz, I get a pretty good download speed of around 10 megabits per second. Then when I go to download a file, which is, say, a 12-megabyte file, it should download in a second, but it takes a lot longer than that. Why is that?
Why is that, Doc?
Okay, this is the thing. People always get confused about this. Your download speed is 12 megabits per second.
Ah, as opposed to megabytes.
Megabytes. Now, see, a byte is actually 8 bits.
Right.
You know? So it actually would take 8 seconds, theoretically, because file sizes are megabytes and speeds are megabits mm-hmm. per second. Now, but you see, when you download stuff as packets, there's overhead. You've got addresses. You've got correction control. So even an optimized network is only going to be 80% of the speed. So if you get 80% of your download speed, it's pretty, pretty good. But chances are... You've got some network congestion. It'll even be lower than that. So you may want to actually know how fast your upload and download speed is. So this is the good news.
What's the good news?
Go to speedtest.net. Speedtest.net, and you can check it out. Now, by the way, I checked my speed this morning, and I have a 20 megabit per second download speed and a 16 megabit per second upload speed. But that could change during peak hours.
I'm glad he solved that premature download problem.
Time for a special. You need your intro. And where did your intro go?
You tell me, buddy.
I don't know.
We have no idea. We have no idea.
You know what? We'll forget the intro today. Hey, it's
wow.
Let's see. They messed around with the board in here.
Yeah, of course.
Ever since you left here.
Hey, whoa,
they screwed everything.
Wait a minute. No,
I think I you know, we had an email. A listener came in. They said they like it when David Byrd comes in to visit the show. And they said, why isn't there a picture of David Byrd on the Tech Talk website?
Right.
Wow.
So I said next time he comes in, we'll snap his picture.
Basically, my relatives called.
Yeah, he got his summer haircut. So while you're doing that,
But he's wearing a tuxedo today. But that'll be okay. I think it'll fit right.
Do I get a countdown? Do I have to have a cold sore in this picture?
Here we go. Okay. Let's take one more picture here for your public.
Thank you, Doc. Okay.
And,
we really have missed you, Doc.
David will actually sign those copies for a...
Yeah, I'll virtually sign them.
Virtually sign them.
A small fee.
You'd sign them for $500.
It's good
to
have you back, Doc. By the way,
where have you been?
That gift of tandoori chicken really came in handy. No, it really did.
Well, thank you.
It was good.
I really pulled out all stops to keep you trucking upstairs. Yeah.
Your wife wins all the high tech gifts. Mm-hmm. What do we get, Jim?
Nothing.
We get nothing.
Squat.
We got squat.
You know, she won another iPod.
Yeah, tell me
You're
about
kidding
it.
Me. I'm
she
not
won, she won an iPod. It was mailed in last week. I don't know how she does it.
What do we get? We get old tandoori chicken with rice.
Mm-hmm.
His wife gets all.
It's got a bite out of it too.
Marianne won again. Wow.
I'm beginning to think that the fix is in on all these prizes. What do you think?
And what's with the watch on, the watch off thing?
I don't know.
You put it on, you take it off. What's the deal here?
I'm trying to make time.
Oh, you're timing
fly.
Me.
I'm timing you.
So,
okay.
To what do we owe the pleasure of this visit, Mr. Byrd?
I haven't seen him talk in a couple of, months?
It's been a while. We've been wondering if you perhaps came to this or something.
I came down seeking knowledge because...
Oh, okay.
Technology.
Suck up.
You came down to the Oracle of Delphi.
Something like that.
The Oracle. This is the Oracle of Tech Talk.
The Oracle of Stratford.
Yeah.
You are the Duke of Download.
Yes.
If I can.
Oh, boy.
No, Rapid Download.
He's going to time your download.
Yeah. You get your watch away from my download. Now, then, Doc, I do want to have a serious question here because I always come to you when I have these questions. Because
what are you buying?
I want to get a smart TV.
See, I knew that.
Okay. Help me with smart. This is my definition of smart TV. And, of course, I feel like Peabody and Sherman here.
Yeah.
you know which role I'm playing, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I want to, my interpretation of the smart TV, and I've seen them in the stores now, is that you put them up and you can go right to YouTube. You can go right to Netflix. You can do all. It's smart.
Mm-hmm.
They got the apps on whatever versus having to stick a CPU down by your big screen TV and doing it the hard way.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So, am I correct?
That is right. They
wow.
actually,
what are they made for?
Actually,
I'm as dumb as you are.
Actually,
wow.
The smart TVs will connect to the internet.
Right.
And you can have, you can connect to the internet two ways. Some of the smart TV, you can connect to the internet sometimes through your DVD.
Right.
And then you just, when you hook your DVD there, you basically have a menu built into the DVD.
Oh.
So if you don't have a smart TV, you got a smart DVD, like a Blu-ray.
Because I'd rather do the smart DVD.
It's cheaper.
Because I don't want to have to go buy another stinking flat screen.
No. Yeah. So what you do, all of the
who's
web...
Dinging us?
So here's the thing.
Who do you think?
Are you dinging us?
Marianne's just telling me one.
I'm getting text messages coming in. Okay, I'm going to...
Who is it?
I don't have no
How
idea.
How dare them? I'm in the middle of a question here.
I'm turning it off because that is just bad cell phone etiquette.
It's not like I'm in Falls Church on the phone trying to get through here.
Okay,
I'm actually here.
Yeah, okay, right. Well.
This is the deal. You can get a DVD player that has an internet connection. That's actually a Wi-Fi.
Okay.
It's got a Wi-Fi internet connection.
I love that. Okay.
And there's a browser built into it, which then is displayed right on your TV.
Is that in most of the new DVDs?
Does it have to be
Blu-ray?
No, it doesn't have to be Blu-ray. But why would you buy something other than Blu-ray? Unless you're just like old technology.
Because I've got DVD collection. I don't have to replace everything every 3 years because there's new tech coming out.
The
how long Blu-ray is going to be around?
I still got an 8-track
The Blu-ray, I think, is backward compatible.
Don't show off your PhD
I think
with
it's
me.
Back to compatible.
Hey, don't show off that PhD with me, okay. All right? Okay, even That's, though it was impressive, though.
And so the thing is, you the cheapest way to do it, and you can get a Blu-ray DVD that has all this for probably $120.
I mean, I can have both, can't I? I can have both DVD player, the regular and the Blu-ray.
You could have them both, exactly. Okay. And then you just get your internet connection, so you got your whole smart TV built right in there.
Right.
Now, what's coming out with the next version of TVs is the Google TV.
Well, here we go.
This is the Google TV. Go. So okay. Google
He's
has
hit my G spot.
That's right. Oh, so Lord. Google has
Not
already is already designing
Take
is already has already outsourced the design for all the electronics to support Google TV, and now some of the top manufacturers now are putting that circuitry directly into the TV.
Oh, I love that.
So then you'll have the Google TV.
Google TV.
Mm. Now the now if you get the Google TV, then
tingly.
That is integrated with the Google tablet, where you can use that for your remote control.
That's something else to buy.
You don't ever plug anything unless Marianne's won a copy of it.
Yeah, that's right.
Does she have the Google tablet?
No, she doesn't. She hasn't won the Google tablet yet.
It's coming.
She's strictly Apple stuff, you know.
Yeah, strictly Apple
stuff. Now, you know, but I've downloaded an application for my iPhone, so I actually control. I've got a remote control on my iPhone. I control my TV from my iPhone.
Well, aren't you special? That's great, Doc. Other than that, I just wanted to ask about the iPhone 5.
Yeah, the
Is
iPhone.
Is that going to be the bigger one?
It's going to be the bigger one. It's going to be the same width screen and a little bit longer.
Oh, same width but longer.
Yeah, same width screen. Same width, because otherwise it won't fit in your pocket.
No.
Right,
no. It's got to be a pocket thing.
Exactly.
So see, it's just a little bit taller, so it... I kind of like it because it looks like a pocket protector now. Now I feel a lot more.
I can see that.
I feel a lot more comfortable with it.
There we go. I know. Pocket protector.
Nerditorium it is in here.
This guy, I've seen this guy in Nordstrom at the pocket protector counter. Because they have
one there?
Yes, they
you
have.
You would know
That's
that.
Right.
Easy.
That's right. See, whenever Dave goes to puts a hot pocket in the microwave,
right, exactly.
He has somebody stand by the microwave as a pocket protector. So
Thank
somebody
you.
Does it.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you.
He's a comedian,
you just,
too.
Well, you know, say what you will about the Doc, but he saved me about $2,000 here because I saw
true.
These smart TVs, and I'm going, oh come on, what? Mm. Now I can just do the Blu-ray.
You do the Blu-ray. That'll tide you over till the next Beautiful. Full sweep generation is, and you get the whole... All the smart stuff in a year or two.
I just bought the Big 52.
I was going to say, two years ago.
The Big 52. I'm not rotating this every 2 years.
Come on, put that in the bedroom.
What do you think I am, a radio guy?
Now, has it changed your life since they discovered the Higgs boson?
Here we go again. Showing off. There we go. He's showing off. Listen, Doc, it's good to have you back.
Okay, well, thank you.
Are you coming back next week, or is this just a
illusion? No, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back.
A hologram?
It's a hologram, it's like a Disney cyborg.
I'm actually working on that, having virtual presence here in the studio.
You know, because every August you always do this. And I don't know if you folks, if you've been listening for a long time, every August the Doc always goes into the... What do we call it? The Galactic Elevator Story. And I love
Oh,
that story.
Yes.
Love
yeah,
that
I've got that. So that's for best of use.
That is best of.
Next to I'm give, String Theory.
I'm going to give, wow. I'm going to mm-hmm. give, I'll give an update on the elevator.
The space elevator.
Before I leave, you know why you can't get a hold of this guy between 4 o'clock in the afternoon and 7? He's watching bikini volleyball. Okay. I had no idea.
On his smart TV.
On his smartphone, no less.
On the smartphone.
We were just talking about
right.
it. The screen's too small for that.
Yeah, it is way too small for
way
that.
Way too small.
Listen, I have to go now, but it's been a lot of fun.
Hey, Dave, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. David Byrd, ladies
Bye.
And gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you.
Soon to be on the web.
It helps if you apply with
we're
going
to post. We're going to post Dave's picture to the web
I'm
soon.
Sorry I screwed up your intro, David. you're listening to Tech Talk with the aforementioned Richard Church, Jim Russ, and David Byrd. And Dr. Church, you're over there. Doing the other stuff besides talking to him and
oh,
me.
Oh, yeah. We are monitoring Tech Talk on the Facebook page. That would be facebook.com/Tech Talk online.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got any questions, just post it there to the Tech Talk page.
That's right. You're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. And online at federalnewsradio.com. Learn all about us at stratford.edu and learn about the show at techtalkonline.com. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz, and now it is time for...
I'm sorry, who are you again?
Oh, yes, Dr. Richard
Schertz.
Okay,
just checking.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Today we're going to be featuring Ren Neg. How would you pronounce that last name? N-G.
I think it's not Neg.
What would you? How would you pronounce that? Ren. Google lady, please.
I sure will.
Well, I'm going to call him Ren Neg. It's N-G is his last name. Ren Neg is founder of and creator of Lytro, and creator of the first commercially available digital light field camera. This is a concept that will revolutionize digital photography. Ren Neg is 32. He was born on September 21st, 1979 in Malaysia. His family immigrated to Melbourne, Australia when he was 9 years old. As a kid, he liked painting, calligraphy, gymnastics, the viola. I played the viola when
Did
I was
really?
Yeah, I played the viola in my younger days. You know, I picked the viola because it was all the violins that we could get for the were all scratched up, but since nobody played the viola, it was nice
there
and shiny,
go.
So I picked the viola. Probably not the right reason.
Probably not.
And
let's,
of course,
we've got the name here. Let's so we can
okay,
get it right for the
go.
Rest of the
NG.
No, that's not going to help us.
NG. Thank you.
For nothing.
as a kid, he also liked photography. His first digital camera was the Nikon D100, and although he carried around a box of film in his refrigerator for several years, he never really went back to film.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to California in 1997 to attend Stanford University, where he studied mathematical and computational science, and he had dreams of becoming a professor.
Ooh.
In 2001, he earned a Bachelor of Science from Stanford. Then in 2002, he earned a Master of Science. And in 2006, he got his PhD. While he was in school, he and his rock climbing buddies became infatuated with photography. But they had all these blurry photos from these trips to Yosemite and Lake Tahoe. And... Ren, I'll call him by Ren since I
like that. Ren, we can at least
and
that.
Ren got to thinking there must be a better way to freeze time. You see, the thing is, when you're hanging off of a rope,
mm-hmm.
you know, upside down on a rock,
you don't have time to focus your camera.
A thousand feet up, and then you have to snap a picture of the guy beside you. You don't really have time to focus.
You got other things on your mind.
Not
dying.
So they got back all these blurry pictures, and so he started thinking about it, and he said there must be a better way to freeze time when you take a picture. Now, he was actually a PhD candidate at the time, and he was researching light fields for his dissertation. And he began to ask himself the question, why is the focus fixed in photographs? Why couldn't you take a picture and focus after the picture was taken?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is almost, it's hard to imagine how that could be possible.
Well, yeah.
And so he started working on that idea. And one of his professors suggested he build a prototype. And in order to demonstrate his idea of how he could do that, so he actually raised $20K and he bought a medium format camera, took it apart, and he built it. Now, the camera that he took apart and reconstructed included an array of micro lenses that was in front of the main sensor of the camera, and that would capture the light fields that were coming in, and then it would and then it would reassemble them in a certain way. But because he had all these micro lenses, he was getting light from all different directions. What he was actually doing, he had created a way to shrink the Stanford multi-camera array, which consisted of 100 cameras, into a single camera. Stanford had pioneered the idea of having these 100 cameras. They take the digital photograph, they're all slightly offset, they throw all that data into a supercomputer, and they do these fancy number crunching calculation. He figured a way to take that concept of the multi-camera array and replace the multi-camera with an array of micro lenses, you see. So then he had a multi-micro lens array, which mm-hmm. was built into the camera. Now, he finished his prototype for his dissertation in 2004. He completed his dissertation in 2006. His dissertation was called the Digital Light Field Photography. That was the name of it. The same year, he formed his company. Now, his company is called ReFocus Imaging Incorporated. His thesis earned the ACM Doctoral Dissertation Award for the best thesis in computer science and engineering, and he also won the Arthur Samuel Award for the best PhD dissertation. Then he thought he should probably form a company to try to build this particular device. See, the prototype that he built was sort of, you know, it was fairly large. It was about 8 inches long and maybe 2 inches on a side, 3 inches on a side, sort of a rectangular box, fairly large when he actually did his prototype. But in fact, it worked. Now here's the idea: you capture, instead of an image on a flat plane, you capture the light rays from coming in from all different directions. And then using that light ray information, you mathematically construct the image that would occur on a flat plane. And when you do the reconstruction through software, you can set the focus at any point you want. So if you want it to be focused on the trees in the background, when you do the reconstruction, you just set the focus in software for the trees. If you want the focus on the people in the foreground, you set the focus there. So he posted some images that were done with this camera on the web. And you click the mouse on the background, and the background gets in focus. You click the mouse on, say, the people in the front, and so the actual picture on the web changes focal point as you click the different places on it.
That's
so
amazing.
All the information is built right into it. I mean, this is actually quite innovative, and the only reason this is practical is that computation cost has dropped down dramatically. So and the cost of very high density arrays has gone down dramatically. So now we can capture more information relating to the light rays, store it in software, and do this computation to generate the picture. So actually, it's really the first major innovation in digital cameras that's come along in years. See, our digital camera makers have been fairly non-innovative. I mean, all they can do is say 8 megapixel, 12 megapixel, 16 megapixel. I mean, what are they doing that's innovative other than just making it bigger?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. And so they really haven't approached any dramatic changes in the technology, which is kind of interesting. Now, he raised, after he got his dissertation and he formed his company called ReFocus Imaging, he raised $50 million in funding. Not bad.
Not at all.
The most recent C round was led by Andreessen Horowitz. Now, early investors included Intuit's Scott Cook, VMware's Diane Greene, and venture capitalist Charles Chi, who was actually named June of this year as the CEO. See, it started out that Wren was originally the CEO of the company in 2006, but he decided in 2012 that he should go back to the lab and innovation. He was probably better in the lab creating things than he was running the company. So Charles Shi became the interim CEO, and then Ren went back to the lab as a full-time employee to focus on product development. Now, the camera that they released is called the Lytro camera, L-Y-T-R-O, the Lytro camera, and it was actually available in February 2012 for $399. And this is the first commercially available camera that employs light field photography. And this lens, of course, as I said, includes thousands of micro lenses, each of which captures a slightly different slice of light. One shutter snap records so much information that a user can readjust the photo after it's been shot, such as shifting the focus from foreground to background. Lytro will ultimately license the technology, and they'll seek a complete penetration of the high-end smartphone market. What they're doing is trying to go in. So maybe two generations down, the iPhone will have this technology built into it. What was interesting, while Steve Jobs was alive, Steve Jobs called Ren up and had him come to Steve's house and give a personal demonstration of this. Steve Jobs was extremely interested in this thing.
He said, "This isn't crap."
He said, "This isn't crap." Those were his very words. "This isn't crap."
What is it? The line, "This doesn't suck." That's
this
right.
Doesn't suck. Right. Yeah. This doesn't suck. And so he was very impressed with it. You see, Ren feels like he is combining art with technology. So he's very much Steve Jobs-like.
Mm-hmm.
And many people have said, you know, Ren is like a Steve Jobs, you know, in terms of his trying to bring technology and art together. Hollywood studios have contacted him to see how he could apply it to movie making. Because you can see, if they were making a movie and they could change the focus while they were doing the cut, it gives the director a tremendous more power, you know, and control over the final cut.
Sure.
Now, a link to his dissertation, it's only 187 pages. So those of you who would like to look at the mathematics behind this thing, I have a link to the dissertation. It's a PDF. It's at lytro.com/rennig-thesis.pdf. I'll have the link right on the website.
Right.
If you'd like to go to the website about what the camera looks like, just go to lytro.com, lytro.com. And there you go. Ren Nig, who's the creator of Lytro Camera, which was, of course, made by his company, which was Refocus Imaging, Inc.
Interesting. Hope you're paying attention to that, because when we come back, we're going to ask you a question. You could win free food here from us on Tech Talk. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome to the classroom of the airwaves.
Right. We don't have time to fight about it this morning.
Okay, no. So earlier in the show, we were talking about Ren Negg, who was the founder of Refocus Imaging, Inc., that makes the Lytro camera. What was the first digital camera that Ren owned?
That's right.
If you get the correct answer to that test question, you will win two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room, and you'll also get an A-plus for the day.
That's right. And, of course, with any quiz, you have to provide us an answer. This time, you have to do it over the phone. The number to call is 877-936-9333. If you're calling from west of Breckenridge, Colorado, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333 or one of the other ways.
Or you could do it on Skype by going Tech Talk Radio 1, and you could call in from either Nigeria or from South Africa or from the Ukraine.
Or Malaysia.
Anywhere. Yes, anywhere you'd want.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about something else. Well, Andrew.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Andrew's going to be taking the calls.
Yes.
The Yahoo was hacked. And when Yahoo was hacked, probably with some kind of SQL injection technique, 442,000 Yahoo passwords were compromised. 342,000 of them were unique and only used by one person. However, 100,000 of them were used by more than one person, or about 22% of the total. And some of them were used by a lot of people. Now, here are the most popular passwords on Yahoo.
Mind-boggling.
The number one password on Yahoo was 123456. That was used by 1,666 security idiots.
Amazing.
Okay, the second most popular password on Yahoo was password. That was used by 780 security idiots.
Mm-hmm.
The third most popular password was welcome.
Great.
That was used by 436 security idiots. The fourth was ninja. That was used by 333 security idiots.
Wonderful.
The next one was ABC123. That's a little better. That was used by 250.
Mm-hmm.
The next one was 123456789. Oh, that's like longer.
Oh, yeah. So it's harder to figure out
that's
that there's
right.
a pattern there.
That was used by 222. And then there were some that weren't quite as good at that. So they just did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
They figured at that point you'd give up.
That was the next one. That's 208. Okay, the eighth most popular password was sunshine. The ninth most popular password was princess.
Oh, boy.
And the 10th most popular password was QWERTY, Q-W-E-R-T-Y. That's, of course, the name of the keyboard refers to the keys right in the middle there.
Gotcha.
So there you go. And so these are the passwords used by those individuals who deserve to have their emails
hacked. Okay, all right. Let's go to the phones here very quickly. Let's go to line one. This will be Wayne calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. Wayne, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk.
Good morning.
Okay, Doc, I hadn't asked a question.
Yes, earlier in the show, I was talking about Ren, the man who developed the Lytro camera, Ren Negg. What was the first digital camera that he owned?
His first camera was a Nikon G100.
That is correct.
There we go.
Very good.
Tell
you
win
fun,
Doc.
Two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room. Just leave your name, address, and email address with Andrew, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Wayne, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling Tech Talk. We'll be right back with more on Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. Tech Talk Radio on the air every Saturday at 9 o'clock, and also online at techtalkonline.com. Learn more about Stratford University by going to stratford.edu. We'll be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Sig Crossland said that Wren's last name might either be anglicized as Ng or Eng.
Okay.
I think he may be right.
I think it could be right.
Wren Ng. I think that may be a very good. Remember
that? I'm glad you went with Wren.
Wren.
Just
Wren,
to cover your bases.
Wren Ng. You remember Wren Ng. You remember the Amazon cloud that went, and we had that big power outage about a month ago. Well, Amazon has been releasing some details about how they lost their system for so many hours. This is like a big black eye right in the face of cloud computing. So they published more details on it. Of course, that outage affected Netflix, Instagram, Pinterest, and caused a It was caused by a 20-minute power outage at a single Northern Virginia data center.
Wow.
The problem started about 7:24 p.m., and there was a large voltage spike on the grid used by two of the Amazon data centers. When technicians tried to move to backup power, the diesel-powered generators didn't work properly at one of the data centers. The generator started successfully, but each generator failed to provide a stable enough voltage to be brought into service. The generators may have been powering up, but the switching equipment at the data center didn't think they were ready for switchover. Then, to confuse matters more, when the power went back on for a few minutes, and then it failed again, just 3 minutes before 8. 7 minutes later, the data center's battery backup started to fail, then the data center went dark. It turned out that the abrupt power outage like that is pretty bad for cloud, although the backup generators finally did start working to restore power just 10 minutes into the second outage. Amazon technicians soon discovered that it was going to take them 3 hours to reboot the affected servers in the data center, and that this delay would be compounded by several bugs in their cloud software that they hadn't known about. They had a bug in the Elastic Load Balancer software, which customers use to spread internet traffic across many Amazon data centers. And this caused this important service to get overwhelmed across all of Amazon. And this was the worst possible time for the service to go down because you couldn't renormalize the load when one data center went out. The Elastic Load Balancer increasingly fell behind processing requests, and pretty soon these requests started taking very long time to complete. Another bug was an Amazon's relational database service that kept a small number of databases from recovering properly from the power outage. Amazon technicians were able to get things up and running for these customers only when they manually restarted the failover system. Amazon is now working to convince customers that it can do a better job of keeping servers up and running. The failing generators had been tested just 6 weeks previously, but now Amazon said it's going to repair and retest the equipment and replace if it's not up to snuff. See, one of the problems is Amazon has created all of their own software themselves. And so that means that it actually hadn't been tested for this particular situation. So there was a bug in the software. They tested it, but they never tested it for this. So the fact that this is, you know, developed by them and them alone means that they're going to have a more robust error checking method going forward. Now, SQL injection attacks are up. 69%. So SQL is a database, SQL injections, and SQL. And that's called SQL Server, SQL databases. SQL is with SQL. And these injection attacks are becoming more significant, especially among hackers, because there are so many websites that are vulnerable to this. Between quarter one of 2012 and quarter two of 2012, there's been an estimated 69% increase in injection attacks. Now, if you look across all the types of attacks, this was monitored by Firehost, which blocks various attacks that are attempting to harm its clients. Firehost broke all of the attacks into four types: cross-site scripting, directory traversals, SQL injections, and cross-site request forgeries. SQL injections were up the most. Firehost said that SQL injections had risen from 277,000 during the first quarter to 469,000 in the second quarter. Now, SQL injection involves entering malicious commands in the URL and text fields of vulnerable websites. You know, if you have to enter data into a website, what you do is, if they don't truncate the data that you send in, you send in this long data stream that actually has commands in it, and it goes in and it overflows the buffer, and then it executes those extra commands because it thinks that you're giving it database commands. And so you're injecting commands into the SQL databases. That's called SQL injection. Now, if a properly written website is going to truncate the input, so you can't do that, but apparently not all software is properly configured. SQL injection attacks have been associated with many high-profile data breaches, such as LulzSec hacking of Sony in 2012. The data is from this year, and so hackers like to steal user account information, credentials, email addresses, and passwords. SQL injection attacks are often automated, and many website owners may be blissfully unaware that their data could actually be at risk. These attacks can be detected, and businesses should be taking some basic steps to fix it. This is one of the biggest security breaches out there, SQL injection attacks. Quite easily fixed, but you just have to design the software to look at all input fields to see whether there's something untoward going on. Let's talk a little bit about, Facebook security.
Yeah.
You know, in Facebook's default security, I thought I'd bring this up because people are using Facebook more and more. Their default security settings, let everybody look at your whole profile, and you really want to adjust your privacy settings. So you can open up Facebook's privacy settings. You click on home. If you're on a computer, you click on home in the top right corner of any Facebook page and choose privacy settings. And there are three big buttons labeled public, friends, and custom. The audience selector is shown on the iPhone. It's shown as a lock on the Facebook app and as a gear on the iPad app. Now, to prevent total strangers from reaching you on Facebook, you can click Edit Settings to the right on how you connect. By default, Facebook allows everybody to look up your username, email, phone number, and to send you messages and friend requests. To restrict contacts, you can change the setting to Friends or Friends of Friends. Now, whether you want to share your Facebook information with everybody or only friends, it's a good idea to know exactly what you're sharing. And the only way to do that is to check your profile. So I advise everybody to go in, check your profile, and restrict it as much as possible, because you never really know who's going to be lurking on your Facebook account. I'll tell you, the show just...
It just flies, especially when Bird comes by.
Yeah, I love that when he comes by and gives us a little...
Brief.
Gives us a little brief. Yeah, so listen, we want you to go to the stratford.edu and check out those programs. We want to go to techtalkonline.com and check out the podcast, or go to Apple iTunes and check out the podcast.
Very good. This show will be rebroadcast tomorrow, rather today at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
And indeed, Washington Nationals baseball is on the radio later on today. The Nats take on the Brewers again in their series in Milwaukee. First pitches at 7:10, 6:30 here for the pregame show on Federal News Radio, the home of the Washington Nationals. Weather forecast, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Partly sunny otherwise, a high near 93 degrees. Right now, outside our studios in Northwest D.C., 83 degrees. It's 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements.